Blog Talk Radio.
Another great show brought to you by the Law of Attraction Radio Network. The Think, Believe, and Manifest Show with author, master trainer, and certified dream coach, Constance Arnold. Join us every week as we bring you life-changing information that will empower your life. And here's Constance.
Hello, and welcome to the Law of Attraction Radio Network. And I am Constance Arnold, your host for the Think, Believe, and Manifest Talk Show. And, of course, I am broadcasting live today from beautiful and just a little bit cold Atlanta, Georgia. I want to thank all of you for joining me from all over the world, and I believe that if you are listening to this show today, that the Spirit attracted you here, and today you will find encouragement, inspiration, and solutions for your life. Well, I really want to give a special shout out to all of my international listeners. You know, we now stream into 121 countries, I believe, Asia, Australia, Pakistan. We have a lot of folks listening in Pakistan, Europe, Canada, and even South Africa. And so thank you once again for joining me. Well, I am doing fine. How about you? It's been a very exciting and interesting beginning of the year for me, and I know for you also, because I've been receiving all of your emails from all over the world. You know, I'm really expectant about what this year holds for me and for you. And I, as I always say, I am excited about the unlimited possibilities and probabilities that are just waiting for you to awaken to it. Well, today my very special guest is Dr. Dennis Kimbrough, and he's going to be sharing about his new book, Have Versus Have Not, What Black Millionaires Know That Others Do Not. And I can't wait to hear what great insight Dr. Kimbrough is going to be sharing with us today, and I know that you're going to be greatly blessed by him. And, you know, on a quick note, next week my very special guest will be Dr. Dennis Waitley. And, you know, he appeared in The Secret, and he's a best-selling author coach. He has coached astronauts, gold medal Olympics, and the Super Bowl champions. And he is best known for the psychology of winning. So he will be my guest on January the 20th. So as you can see, I have really lined up for you some great guests this year, and I want you to take all the information that they are sharing and really begin to take small baby steps, as I always say. So let's take a quick commercial break, and I will be right back with Dr. Dennis Kimbrough.
Hello, this is Constance Arnold, your success coach. Do you feel stuck? Are you ready for change in the areas of business, relationships, or career? Then contact me today for your complimentary coaching session. We will partner together to develop individualized strategies and projects that will move you towards the life of your dreams. So email me at constance@fulfillingyourpurpose.com. Or visit my website, fulfillingyourpurpose.com, and discover and take advantage of the diverse coaching packages that I have designed just with you in mind.
The University of Attraction. Where else can you take free, interactive courses from international scientists, medical doctors, spiritual leaders, and experts in the field of the Law of Attraction? At the university, you will have your personal questions answered, enhance your intuitive skills, communicate with the angels, fill your life with music, and free meditation and hypnosis downloads. Sign up today. Go to loaradionetwork.com and click on the University of Attraction. The doors are wide open, waiting for you now.
The Law of Attraction is real. I'm Srini Pillay, MD, author of Life Unlocked, Seven Revolutionary Lessons to Overcome Fear. I'm extremely excited to be a faculty member of the University of Attraction, and I hope that you can join me in my six-week course entitled The Science Behind the Law of Attraction, How to Use Brain Science to Enhance Your Chances of Success. So often, people find themselves wishing for things or writing checks, believing without realizing that the brain handles wishes and dreams in a very particular way. Without this knowledge, it is very difficult to give your brain the correct direction so that it can attract what you want into your life. Join me for my free interactive course at the University of Attraction today.
Let me ask you a question. Are you trying to improve yourself? If so, I have some good news and some bad news for you. The bad news is it's impossible. The good news is that's because you're already whole and complete. Hi, my name is Derek Riedel, and over the last few decades, we've been bombarded with messages about how to improve ourselves and have it all. And rather than making our lives better, it's made many feel more fearful and inadequate and put the ultimate goal further in the future. But there's a revolutionary new way, the law of emergence, a powerful principle that says that everything you could ever want, hope for, or desire is already in you. And when the conditions are right, it naturally unfolds. Join me for a very special teleseminar at the University of Attraction, January 27th, where together we'll take your life to the next level.
Hello, this is Constance Arnold, author and certified dream coach. Join me beginning January 26th for 4 weeks as I share with you how to make your dreams come true in 2011. You know, during my career, I have helped over 10,000 clients begin to live the life of their dreams. I will teach you how to develop strategies and projects that will move you towards your dream, utilizing a simple, easy, effective process for rapid change. You will learn how to identify and eliminate those limiting beliefs that have been holding you back from the life that you deserve. This is your opportunity to jump into the driver's seat and take control of your life. So register today at the University of Attraction and begin the first steps toward making your dreams come true.
Well, I want all of you to enroll in the University of Attraction. I'm one of the faculty members, as well as Dr. Sereni Pillay, who is the MD from Harvard, and you can receive all kind of free articles, free downloads, and just a wealth of information to really change your life. So go to loaradionetwork.com and click the link on the left that says University of Attraction. Well, are you ready? I am. Today, my very special guest is Dr. Dennis Kimbrough. Dr. Kimbrough is an author, educator, researcher, speaker, and is an expert in the area of entrepreneurship and human potential. He is the author of so many books, but just to name a few, Think and Grow Rich, A Black Choice, which he co-authored with Napoleon Hill, What Makes the Great Great, Daily Motivation for African Americans, and he is here today to share about his new book that is about to be released, Have Versus Have Not, What Black Millionaires Know That Others Don't. He has appeared on the Today Show, Larry King, CNN, and I could go on and on. And he and I live in the same city, but we haven't had an opportunity to meet, and I pray that one day he and his beautiful wife, Pat, and I might meet, and I'm just so grateful to have him today. Dr. Dennis Kimbrough, welcome again to the Law of Attraction Radio Network.
I love being on your show, Constance, right back at you. I hope that you're staying warm here in lovely Atlanta.
I am, and for those of you who are listening, we just had a very interesting snow and ice experience, and I asked Dr. Kimbrough, was he out there driving, skating on the ice on these great freeway?
No, I let somebody else do it. I had cabin fever. I was snowbound, but it gave me an opportunity to just relax and sit in my office and do some critical thinking.
Right. Well, let's just go ahead and get started. You know, and we're going to be talking about your new book, Have Versus Have Not, What Black Millionaires Know That Others Don't. But before we do, since we have so many new listeners all over the world, I would like for you to briefly share your personal and amazing story. I mean, you've made such an enormous contribution with your research and your writings, but sometimes people see your success, but they don't know the history behind the story. So for my new listeners,
well, I'm a little bit of an open book, and you've heard it before, Constance. I had just graduated. I had defended my doctorate at Northwestern University, which was on wealth and poverty among underdeveloped countries, particularly African countries. And I guess something got a hold of my spirit where I didn't want to study poverty and I didn't want to look at underdeveloped countries. I wanted to look at prosperity, abundance, success, and wealth, and particularly from the standpoint of those individuals who made that come true, particularly peak-performing African-Americans. So I took it upon myself to carve out a list of several people who I wanted to interview, and you can imagine the people who were on that list were going back 20 years at the time. John Johnson of Ebony Magazine, Earl Graves, Don King, you know, people who really made a mark for themselves. And I went around and I asked for an interview, and they gave me an interview. Well, I had, newspaper articles published. I had magazine articles published long before I had ever, you know, finished a book that I was going to write on my experience. When I got a phone call from W. Clement Stone, who at the time was the president of the Napoleon Hill Foundation, and it was over the course of that conversation, he asked me to come to Chicago, and we wanted to meet and talk, and this, I had no idea with the underlying premise of that meeting. Well, when I got to Chicago, he shocked me by saying, you know, you're not the first person to go around the country interviewing successful African-Americans, and I said, I'm not, and he said, no. And then he reached across his credenza and pulled out the last 100 pages written by Napoleon Hill, who at the time was attempting to write a black version of his all-time classic, Think and Grow Rich. Hill was in his 80s. He got 100 pages into the manuscript before dying of a stroke. And W. Clement Stone said to me, I got a proposition for you. And I said, what is that, Mr. Stone? He said, well, I want you to finish, complete, and update this book. And I said, what book? And he says, the manuscript that's seated in your lap. At that time, Constance, my book that I was working on was What Makes the Great Great, which was released as my third book. That was really going to be my first book. And I said, well, I can't do that. And he said, why not? And I said, well, I'm working on a book of my own. And he said to me, and I'm quoting verbatim, he says, if you have any sense, you'll complete and finish this book and push your book aside. Well, I thought about it, and I tossed and turned, and I took the manuscript home not knowing what I was going to do. And I looked at the manuscript, and all he had, Constance, he had 100 pages. There were no chapter headings. There were only three interviews in there, none of which I could use. And they were a little bit more than ramblings, but whatever he discussed repetitively over and over, I set it up as a chapter, and you can imagine, you know, Napoleon Hill. He wrote constantly about definition of purpose. He wrote constantly about goal setting. He wrote constantly about what I call passion and right mental attitude. And I set those up as 12 different chapters, and I sat down, and I thought I was equal to the task. Well, that meeting that I had with W. Clement Stone was November 4th, 1986. I accepted the challenge, I sat down at my computer, and I wrote 90 pages, and I sent those 90 pages to the Napoleon Hill Foundation. Well, the foundation read those 90 pages, no one was impressed, they threw it in the trash. I said, no problem. This time I wrote about 140 pages, and sent it up to the foundation, and they read it, and they looked it over, and they threw those 140 pages into the trash. Well, before I could commit pen to paper, I received a phone call from the executive director of the Napoleon Hill Foundation, a gentleman by the name of Michael Ritt. And he said, Dennis, he says, do us a big favor. Before you write another page, take your doctor, take your credentials, take your PhD and put it on a shelf. You won't need it here. And I said, what do you mean? He said, we want you to write this book as if you're writing a letter to a friend. In other words, the focus is on the reader. And so I thought about that, and it changed my writing style forever. But I am so glad that he did that, and so glad that the foundation would do that, because my writing style now is timeless. I don't care, I have students here at the institution where I teach, Clark Atlanta University. Now they're 17, 18, 19, 20 years old, and this is the first time they're reading the book. And they want to know, my God, where has this book been, blah, 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 this, that, and everything. In other words, no matter where you are in your development, no matter where you are in your age, it is timeless and is right on time, and I am blessed for that. Well, thousands, if not millions of copies later, here I am, and I'm working on, or I just finished my new book, and the beat goes on. Think and Grow Rich, a Black Choice. People ask me all the time, you know, how did you get the Napoleon Hill Foundation, and how did Napoleon Hill's name on your book, and blah, blah, blah. And I tell them all the time, I said, wait a minute, back off. I said, the Napoleon Hill Foundation, specifically W. Clement Stone, he called me. I did not call him. And I had no idea, and this is exactly what Mr. Stone said, if Napoleon Hill would have lived 1 year longer, if he would have died in 1971, the working title on his manuscript was Blacks Are Growing Rich, would have been out in 1971, not 1991.
Oh, that is so amazing, and I wanted you to share that story because there are so many people all over the world listening who've not heard that, and so many times people just sort of give up and are not persistent. And I have a quick question for you before we start talking about your new book. Do you feel that that was God that touched this man's
heart
to call you?
No, without a doubt. I mean,
okay.
Come on, Constance, where do ideas come from? An idea is completely ethereal. It's spirit. I mean, you know, who touched me? You know, Jesus walking down the old dusty street and talking about the woman who had an issue. Who touched me? That doesn't mean that the woman physically touched the hem of his garment. I mean, Constance, we live in Atlanta. You got a grandmother. You got an aunt. You got a surrogate or whoever. It's her birthday. She lives in California. You send her a card. 2 or 3 days later, she receives the card, and she calls you up to acknowledge that she received the card. She says, Constance, I received the birthday card, and it was so touching. You didn't physically touch her, but you touched her. So, of course, where do ideas come from? Your ideas come from the one source. I don't care what you call it. I don't care whether you're Napoleon Hill. I don't care whether you're Charles Hennell. I don't care if you're Andrew Carnegie. What was Andrew Carnegie's first book? The Gospel of Wealth. They all come from one source, knocking on your subconscious, asking you, do you want more out of life? You and I are the first inhabitants in this world. You're Eve, I'm Adam. What language do we speak? Well, we speak the original language. People say, well, they spoke English. English wasn't even created then. Well, they spoke Sanskrit. Sanskrit wasn't even created then. What language did they speak? They spoke the original language. What is the original language? The original language is mind. Oh, you must have read my mind. Oh, I was about to say that. Oh, you know what? You and I were like-minded. So it comes from the single source. You have not because you wanted not. Why? Because of the thoughts that you send out there. They show people going to the airport, the snow hitting Atlanta, and they interview travelers going to the airport. The airport's so crowded, I hate going to the airport. Why? Because I can never find a parking space. Well, that was in your mind before you left home. You went to the airport looking for, can't find a parking space. And guess what? You found it.
Right.
It's packed. It's jammed. Man, the economy is tough. There's no set number of jobs out in the economy. The economy is right on time for those who have the right mental attitude. And I'm not talking right versus left. You know, master, we fished all day and we haven't caught a thing. Well, this time cast your nets on the right side. We're not talking right versus left. We're talking change your thinking. Change your thinking, you'll change your life.
So did you always know on the inside, Dr. Kimbrough, that you were going to be successful? I mean, you had, were you praying? And I'm just throwing this out.
Oh, yeah, and I still do it. I said, there's got to come time for you to center your thoughts. Mm-hmm. For you to center your thoughts. And that's what is completely and totally unforgivable, that someone could actually believe that you could take a prayer out of school. You know, we see that, you know, what's going on in Tucson and every day, and the universe is begging for you to center your thoughts. Now's the time in which we need prayer. Well, they took prayer out of school. How could you take prayer out of anything? If you put a blindfold over my eyes, Constance, I can think a prayer. I mean, you take a hammer, knock me over the head, make me unconscious, I'll dream a prayer. Take a sock and put it in my mouth. And you know what I'll do, Constance? I'll hum a prayer. I'm on the phone right to you right now. When you think you're interviewing me, wrong, Constance. We're talking about prayer. I'm in a state of prayer. And what is prayer? Centering your life. This is the center. Center your life. And that is the only way that we communicate with our Creator. This is the only way that we communicate with our higher power, with the Almighty. You center your life. you're not a piece of raisin on a piece of raisin bread where you can take the raisin out of the raisin bread. No, our existence is more like a wave in the ocean. How can you separate a wave from the ocean? You can't. How can you separate yourself from the Creator? You can't. After I leave this existence, if I took a piece of wood and I threw it in the fire, you know, and then it becomes, you know, it goes up into the air and smoke, and then it becomes soot in the chimney. Well, you go ahead and you take a knife and you scrape that soot off the chimney and you take it into a chemistry class. It's the same components of the wood that you threw on the fire. Constance, is going to come a time when you and I are going to leave this plane of existence, and when we go to the next phase and they take the same chemical compound, or we'll be on the next phase, we're the same chemical component that we are now. We can never be destroyed. You tear this body down in 3 days, and I will uplift it. That's not me. That's Jesus Christ. Did you come to destroy the law? No, I came to uphold it.
That's so powerful. Well, your new book, I love the title. How did you come up with that title, Have Versus Have Not?
As a member one time of the have-nots, I always wanted to find out what separates the have from the have-nots. And just like, you know, Earl Nightingale in The Greatest Discovery, just like Napoleon Hill in Think and Grow Rich, I just mentioned to you Andrew Carnegie in The Gospel of Wealth. I mean, even Adam Smith, The Wealth of Nations, he talks about IH. What is IH? Invisible hand. Have versus have not. What is the critical factor that separates the two? They're thinking. And I found 9 disciplines. And you know what I did over a 6-year period? I surveyed and interviewed black millionaires. No athletes, no entertainers, no celebrities, folks you just pass on the street. And as you and I know, Constance, there are about 35,000 black millionaires in the United States. Of the 300 million people who live in the United States, you've got about 9 million millionaires, and you've got about 35,000. King Day, which will be up this Monday, when Martin Luther King led the Montgomery bus boycott, there were 5 millionaires, 5 black millionaires in the U.S., and now they're about 35,000. So I developed a full-blown survey. I asked them 118 questions, and I surveyed a representative sample of them, and I sent that survey out, and I asked them 118 questions, everything from where you were born to, you know, what are the factors that are, you know, facing black America right now. And I can tell you, for the most part, anything and everything that you'd ever want to know about a black millionaire.
So let's talk about how do black millionaires think?
Well, number one, I found 9 disciplines that these two are they don't all subscribe, and you won't find when you look at them from a distance, you won't find all 9 disciplines. But when you look at a representative body, this is the circle, you know, in which they revolve around. Number one, a passion and a focus on the innate strengths. You got to have both. You just can't be passionate. I mean, you won't find any bigger New York Yankee fan than me. And my wife knows that 3 times a week I'm going to go to the gym and I'm going to lift weights. And she'll tell me every day, you know, you can go there and you can lift all the weights that you want, but there's no way that you'll ever play shortstop for the New York Yankees, no matter how passionate you are about them. And I said, no problem. Why? Because I know my unique strengths. Now, my passion and unique strengths do coincide. You know, my unique strength is that I can write and I can communicate effectively. And I can teach. Well, that has got to be my passion. And that's what I do now. They refuse to undertake tasks where they cannot perform at their best. They constantly ask the question, where can I apply my talents and gifts to render the best advantage? Number 2, autonomous and independent. They have a deep need for internal control. They are deeply driven. They are deeply driven to compete, and they are intensely goal-oriented. And here we are right now, 2011, people said, I just interviewed over the Christmas break Daymond John. Daymond John may not mean anything to you, but he is the founder of FUBU, the clothing line FUBU. And they've taken on new brands, and at one time FUBU did $350 million in sales, and I ask him, do you set goals? And he says, yes. And he says, you know, I set goals. I set and reset my goals every 6 months. Every 6 months. And I live by my goals. My goals are my sheet of music in which I play off of. So, you know, we can look at all nine disciplines. We may not have the time to go into all nine disciplines, but if anybody took these nine disciplines and used it for the underpinning of their life, that would place anybody on the fast track to success and financial independence.
So what would you say, it is the beginning of the year, and for my listeners, how can they set an intention or goal setting? What should they do besides write it down and review it? What is what you suggest?
Well, number one, you got to realize you're playing off a clean sheet of paper. So number one, dream big dreams. Dream big dreams. See yourself where you want to be, not where you are. Where do you want to go? What do you want to do? What do you want to have? What do you want to become? You know, in terms of the law of attraction, it's called intentions. What are you intending to do? Where do you want to wind up? So number one, dream big dreams. Number two, Constance, be inner-directed versus outer-directed. Because when you begin to dream big dreams, here come all the dream stealers. Here come all the naysayers. Here come all the non-believers, underachievers. You can't do this. You can't do that. So in other words, you better turn inward. Be inner-directed versus outer-directed. What I found from these individuals, they weren't so quick to believe well-meaning friends or family members who said, you can't do this, you can't do that. They walked to a beat of a different drummer. Number three, dedicate yourself to lifelong learning. Take in the information. Read the books. If you read 30 to 60 minutes a day in the field of your choice, and I don't care what that field is, after 3 years, you'll be known throughout your community. After 5 years, you'll be known across the country. After 7 years, Constance Arnold, you will draw world recognition. What I found from these millionaires, they were constant students. They always took in the information. As one of the respondents to my survey said, you know, talking about the difference between formal and informal education, you know, tell your students to go ahead and hurry up and complete your degree so you can begin your education.
That's interesting.
Complete your degree so you can begin your education. And they read anywhere between 5 to 9 books a year. Mostly biographies, business, history, whatever. 5 to 9 books a year. So number one, dream big dreams. Number two, inner-directed versus outer-directed. Number three, take in the information. Why is that critically important? Because you operate in a capitalist economy. And like I told you before, capitalism is not a dirty word. Capitalism means that everything is for sale. But the Latin root of the word capitalism, caput, what does it mean in Latin? It means head. Take in the information. And particularly with African Americans, no one watches more TV than black females. The average black female watches more than 7 hours of TV a day. And you add to that the 3.5 hours that she listens to the radio per day. Only 15% of African Americans either read a newspaper, either physically read it or read it online. So in other words, we got to change that, take in the information, and then last but not least, Constance Arnold, believe in yourself when no one else will. Believe in yourself when no one else will, which is number five on the list of disciplines for black millionaires. They never consider the possibility of failure. What is persistence, Constance Arnold? Persistence is the level of belief that you have in yourself. I interviewed a gentleman who's worth about $150 million. He started a food service business, African American, started a food service business. When he shared his idea years ago as a young boy growing up in Omaha, Nebraska, he told everybody what he was going to do. And what was the response? You'll never be more than a head cook. You'll never be more than a head waiter. They didn't believe in his dream. They turned their back on him. $150 million later, he told me, I said, have you ever encountered failure? He said, yeah. He says, remember that old saw, that old mantra? If at first you don't succeed, try again. He said, they need to change that. If at first you don't succeed, welcome to the club.
Very powerful. And so how do black millionaires deal with setbacks, obstacles, and challenges when they're pursuing
their goals? Well, they know that they keep score. They're the only individuals who keep score. And you know that you're going to have setbacks. Again, going back to Damon John, the founder of FUBU, he told me he was turned down for 27 banks. Kathy Hughes of Radio 1, who I spent 2 days with, she was turned down more than 30 banks. She slept on the floor of her radio station. Damon John, he was in business for 6 years before he ever made a dime. For 3 years, he slept on the floor to his house because he sold all the furniture in his house to bring in sewing machines. He slept next to the sewing machines on the floor to his house. He did that for 3 years. But it's only I who keep score. Persistence, the level of belief that you have in yourself, and success. Listen to me, Constance Arnold, and all the people within your realm, all the ears that you are touching, I mean, success is a statistical event. That's all it is. Success is a statistical event. Before the RM group in Vogue broke up, they practiced 10 hours a day. Tiger Woods hits 1,000 golf balls a day. Success is a statistical event. So it is only the individual who keeps score.
Well, yeah, I know you shared your own personal story the last time you were on, and you were saying how persistence is what kept you going, how you lost a car, almost lost your home, but it was just something
on the inside. Oh, yeah, I lost two cars, almost lost my house on 5 different times. I was talking about the 10 forms of wealth. And the number 6 form of wealth is persistence, the ability to hang on when others gave up. That is the only form of wealth that I could use. The only form of wealth that I could use. And like I told you, me and my wife were in this together, and today is our 41st wedding anniversary.
Oh, happy anniversary. That is amazing. And she is such a baby. That she's so sweet. Every time I call, she's so lovely and so cordial.
Yeah, so today's the day. I mean, but 7 years we walked this path. There were times when she got sick and tired of it and she quit. There were times when I got sick and tired of getting our teeth kicked out and getting our hands smacked, and I quit. But Constance, we never quit together. We never quit together. So, I mean, the fact of the matter is, I mean, the average millionaire, and I'm talking about all millionaires now, all 9 million millionaires in the United States, and how blessed you are, to live in that environment. How blessed you are to get on the phone and talk to somebody or go sit at somebody's lap. How in the hell do you think Steve Jobs built the Apple computer? I mean, he had so many Hewlett-Packard engineers in his neighborhood, man. And he would go, when they would come home from work 5, 6, 7 o'clock at night, he would knock on the door and interview them. He worked for Hewlett-Packard at one time, and he went to his boss and said, can I take one of the computers home? His boss said, why? He said, I want us to take it apart and see how it works. He went one semester at Reed College, and why did he drop out of Reed College? Because he wanted to take a calligraphy class. And the advisors told him, you can't take a calligraphy class, it's not a prereq. He drops out of Reed College, and then that spring semester sits in on that calligraphy class. Why was that critically important? Because when he sat in on that calligraphy class, that's when he got the idea for Apple Computer.
Mm.
So come on. I mean, let's connect the dots.
And so what about associations? Do millionaires just associate with certain people, just like you just shared?
Without a doubt. Networking. You know, there's a point in my book where I talk about the calculus of compensation. Just like there's a calculus in math, or there's a calculus in compensation, and there's a calculus in wealth. And I explained that these are 12 different variables, Constance, and I explained in the book how the have-not view it and how the have view it. And one of them is relationships. Now, how do the have-not view relationships? Well, social, party, let's get together, let's have a few drinks. What time do you knock off? Well, how do the have view relationships? Networking. It's not who you know, it's what you know about who you know. And people don't care about you, Constance Arnold, until you care about them. I tell my students all the time, I say, get the AJC and make sure that you get the Atlanta Journal-Constitution either on a Tuesday or Wednesday, and go to the business section, and they will tell you what's going on in the Atlanta area, who's coming to town to speak, what type of luncheons or what type of evening events or socials that they're going to have, and go hear that speaker. And they say, Dr. Kimber, why should I go hear the speaker? I said, well, you're not going to listen to the speaker. You're attending that event. Because you're going there to meet the person who's seated in front of you, meet the person who's seated behind you, meet the person who's seated to your left and to your right, and share your goals and your ideas with them. Relationships is critical. The average individual in our society knows 270 other people. That's how many people will show up to your funeral if the weather is clear. Average funeral in the United States is 270 people strong. Have you tapped into that network? When you're chasing your dream, when you got the idea for your own radio show, did you tap into those 270 other folks? Did you share your dream with them? How many of those folks, 270 people, saw your business plan, saw your concept page? That is critical.
Not 270. That is mm-hmm. so powerful. Well, if you're just joining me, I'm speaking with Dr. Dennis Kimbrough, and we're talking about his new book, What Black Millionaires Know That Others Don't. Talk about visualization or seeing.
Oh, yeah, everything occurs to you twice in life. First the inner, then the outer. First the thought, then the thing. First the mental, and then the physical. And to the extent that you control what goes on the inside of your life, you'll control what goes on the outside. See with your mind's eye, because you and I both know your physical eye will lie to you. Your physical eye is lying to you right now. Why? I mean, some of you looking in your wallet, and you see nothing. Some of you looking in your purse, and you see nothing. You're looking at that old raggedy car. I mean, you've got to see with your mind's eye. Because, again, going back to the master, going back to the carpenter of Galilee, what does he say? Well, he tells us, you know, the first shall be last and the last shall be first. Well, what does that mean? Well, we got the King Day holiday celebration coming up, and you ask any of these civil rights leaders, and they'll tell you, well, Black America has been last all these years. One day we'll be first. That doesn't mean that. These individuals are speaking to you on a spiritual level, damn it. Connect the dots. What it means that you and I live in a society that says, until I see the physical, until I am able to touch the physical, until I'm able to sit in that brand new car, until I'm able to walk into that brand new house, until I'm able to shake my hands with my brand new boss who's paying me X amount of dollars, I won't believe it. Well, the Bible says don't do that. The Bible says the physical that you have first, put last. And the mental that you have last, put first. See with your mind's eye. Everything happens to you twice. Place the mental first. Dream it. Close your eyes. Dwell on it. Smell it. Sniff it. Taste it. Touch it with your mind's eye. And it's got nothing. And that's not me. That's the universe telling you that. The Bible is a very old book. I mean, the Bible, all 40 authors, all 66 books. Now imagine this, Constance, that you and I are called upon to be one of the writers in this book of books. Do you know where our thinking has got to be? Just think how ego and narcissistic you would have to be to pick up the book of Matthew, to pick up the book of Luke or Mark, to read the Beatitudes and say, I know exactly what they're saying. Hell no, you don't know what they're saying. Do you know what their level of thinking is to be tapped on the shoulder to be one of the 40 authors? I mean, many have been called, but only few answered the call. I mean, Jesus threw it out there, and at one time he had 1,000 followers and disciples, but then that 1,000 was called down to 150, that 150 was called down to 12, and even one of the 12 went wayward. And you're telling me, oh, I know exactly what they're saying. You know, Jeremiah, I know exactly what they're saying. And Joshua, I know exactly what they're saying. No, you don't know. But you can do by taking time out of your schedule every day and getting centered, by closing your eyes and visualizing and allowing the Spirit to come in. Again, going back to the King holiday, man, all we have to do is look at the example of Martin Luther King. He got up the same hour every day of his adult life, 6:30. He ate the same breakfast, coffee and orange juice. And for the first 45 minutes to every hour of the day, Constance Arnold, he went into a study. He had 200 books in the study, and he meditated. Every hour of the day, he meditated. The first thing he did, he visualized. He got set. Be still. And listen to that voice. Be still. Peace. Be still. Well, can't get your attention when you got 50 million thoughts. I can't get your attention when you're running around acting crazy. Can't get your attention when you're at Lenox Mall shopping. But I will force you to be still. How would I force you to be still? Because when you're buying that purse or buying that new suit and you swipe your credit card and it doesn't go through. Oh, I got your attention. You're ripping and running, doing 50 million things, and I'm trying to get your attention. Will you please be still? How can you be still when you get in the car, freezing outside, and the engine won't start up? Oh, now that I got your attention, now that we call the pause, will you relax? Let's get in the process of visualizing. We need to go somewhere.
Oh, that's powerful.
That is so powerful.
It is, and I practice that every day, and I want to talk to you just a little bit about entrepreneurs. a lot of people email me and said, Constance, I want to start my own business. Talk about entrepreneurship and so forth. Some of my listeners who are living in third world countries who may have a God idea, what should they do? How should they begin if they don't have any money?
Well, I mean, number one, you got to recognize there are five phases to entrepreneurship. But the critical phase, the five phases to entrepreneurship, number one, new venture creation. That's phase number one. And what is new venture creation? What we just discussed. That's when you have the idea for a new business, you know, for a new product, for a new service in your head, in your mind. You haven't done anything yet. You haven't written a business plan. You haven't told anybody. You don't even have an office. You don't even have a building. You don't even have money. I mean, but it's in your mind. And wherever you go, you're scouting out opportunities. You're meeting new people, and you go ahead, you take that business card, and let me put that business card in a file because I know I'm going to use it. I'm going to share it in my business plan with this individual when the time comes. You're driving down the street, and you see a building. Man, that's going to make a great location for my business. New venture creation. That's phase number one. Now, you've got millions of people right now who are in phase number one. They don't even know it. And Constance Arnold, what is the definition of entrepreneurship? Entrepreneurship, you know, the definition of entrepreneurship is pursuit of an opportunity without any regard to the business at hand. Pursuit of an opportunity without any regard to the resources at hand. That means if you don't have the money, you don't have the context, damn it, I don't care, I'm starting this business. That's J.B. Say. J.B. Say, the French economist who conjured the term entrepreneurship. So number one is new venture creation. Number two is startup. What is phase number two? That's when you begin to physically get the business. That's when you get to physically get the, you know, the office, the building, whatever. That's when you cut the light switch on. That's when you, at startup, that's when you begin to galvanize your resources. That's when you write the business plan. That's when you go to venture capitalists. That's when you go to bankers. That's when you go to accountants. You're physically open up your business. Phase number three is that's when you galvanize, you know the people. That's when you've got to, you know, manage the people. And in phase number three, Constance, that's where so many entrepreneurs fall short. There's a big difference between being an entrepreneur and being a manager. You have so many folks out there who are creative and innovative, but they don't know how to manage people. And that's where the business goes down the tube, not for lack of money. Because if you got the people, you'll have the opportunity and you'll have the business. And so many fall short. You got to find people who will believe in your dream as much as you will. You go ahead and you start this business, and you got a team of folks. You got a team of 12 people. If you didn't show up at that business here on a Friday, will the business still be there Monday? If you didn't show up at that business for 2 weeks, will the business still be there 2 weeks out? If you didn't show up for 6 months, will they run and take your business and have so much passion in that business, the same amount, same level as you? And that's difficult.
It is.
So number one is new venture creation. Number two is startup. Number three is managing. Number four, and this is critical, is leading. You got to take your people from managing to leading them. You got to scout out new opportunities. You got to see what's out there. And at stage number four, the two factors that you've got to have is innovation and creativity. And there is a big difference between innovation and creativity. Creativity is the ability to summon an idea. Okay? This morning, Constance, I jumped in the shower, and I got 50 million ideas while I was in the shower. When you were driving to the radio station to tape this interview, you got 50 million ideas on that drive. I mean, creativity, the ability to summon an idea. But you got to be innovative, too. And what is innovative? You got to be able to execute that idea. I mean, an idea won't do you any good unless you can execute it. And we live and have our being in a capitalistic economy. I mean, you got to be creative. You got to be able to not only spot a trend, but you got to be able to anticipate a trend. What do I mean by that? If you're walking down Peachtree Street, you can see the way that kids are dressing today. Oh, they got the baggy jeans. They got the Timberland shoes. Oh, I see. Oh, those boots must be in style. See, anybody can spot a trend. Because you're seeing down the street. Well, Constance, can you see around the corner? Can you anticipate a trend? This is all level four. This is all level four. All right, you know where your radio station is, January 2011. Where's it going to be in July 2011, 6 months out, Constance? That's critical. And then the last stage is called merger and acquisitions or exit strategy. Are you going to be in the business 20 years from now? I mean, who are you going to buy? What other businesses are you going to lure? Or are you going to sell the business? Mergers and acquisitions or exit strategy. Are you going to buy your competitors out? Or are you going to sell to your competitors? Are you going to be in this business 10 years from now, 20 years from now? Those are the five stages of entrepreneurship. And until you go through all five stages, you're not an entrepreneur. You're the opposite of an entrepreneur. What's the opposite of an entrepreneur? A hustler. And you don't want to be a hustler.
That is so interesting.
No one's going into the beauty salon. No one's going into the barbershop selling T-shirts. No. You do this the right way. You'd be surprised how many would-be entrepreneurs out there.
Right.
There are a lot of would-be entrepreneurs that are hustling and are into income replacement. In other words, they worked in corporate America for 5, 10, 15 years, and they're really not into entrepreneurship. All they want out of the deal is get the same money they made in corporate America so they can put food on the table, keep a roof over the head, and get their clothes out the cleaners on Friday. Well, you're not an entrepreneur. You're into income replacement. See, Phil Knight of Nike Shoes is an entrepreneur. Phil Knight of Nike Shoes is an entrepreneur. In 1984, his business was going down the tube. He came precariously close to Chapter 11, Chapter 13. What saved him? Michael Jordan and the Air Jordan brand. And Michael Jordan wouldn't have gone to that meeting with Phil Knight unless his mother made him. He said, no, you promised that man that you're going to get on a plane and fly out to Oregon. You're going to keep your word. Put him on that plane, went out to Oregon, and it was in that meeting that they took a mold of his foot and started the Air Jordan brand. All Phil Knight wanted out of the deal was $10 million to recoup his opportunity cost. The first production run of Air Jordans, $130 million. Don't you know that when they release a new upgrade of that brand, I mean, they got to tell the local school system when they're going to do it. Why? Kids will cut school to go to the, you know, to the Foot Locker or to Athletic Attic to get the new Air Jordans.
So this is a great time for people. I know that globally and economically a lot of people are challenged. So this is really a great
time. It's always a great time for success. Uh-huh. What is the challenge? Just because you don't have it physically in your hand right now doesn't mean it doesn't exist. Damn it, Constance, for 4 days the sun didn't come out in Atlanta. You're telling me the sun wasn't shining? Are you going to tell your listeners that? Where is it? It always existed. I've always been there. Why are you looking for the living among the dead, Constance? It's always there. Don't touch me yet. I haven't been to my father. It's always there. And the only way that you're going to bring in it is visualization and to be still. It exists. My question to you and your listeners, are you going to be around to collect it? When I wrote the first page of my book, it was already a bestseller. I had to make sure that I was going to be around 7 years to collect it. It took me 6 years to write Have Versus Have Not. I know it's going to be a bestseller. I had to make sure for 6 years I was going to be around to collect it.
And so it hasn't been released yet, and you already know.
I already know. Hmm. I'm on the phone talking to you right now. The book hasn't been released yet. You know how many articles I've written on this book, and the book hasn't even been released yet. I don't even know if the Napoleon Hill Foundation, the publisher that buys it, I don't even know if they're going to keep the title of the book. I don't know. But that doesn't mean that it's still the book. It's still the book. Oh, my goodness. Where have we been? Will somebody connect the dots?
Yes.
50 plus 50 is 100. If I tell you that 50 plus 50 is 99, what is the difference between me and you, Constance? The difference is you know the truth and I don't. The truth, Jeremiah 29:11. I have plans for you to prosper you, to give you abundance, to give you the desire of the heart. I know every hair on your head. Now you can go around here and you can waste 10, 15 years of your life like Ted Williams, homeless on the streets.
Yes, isn't that an amazing story?
Yeah. For 10, 15 years, he didn't know the truth. Now he knows the truth. but it won't make any difference. I mean, people, you know, he's telling people, oh, man, you changed my life. Nothing has changed. And no one, and Dr. Phil's not changed in his life, or Oprah's not changed his life. No one's going to change his life, and nothing will change in his life. And he can't change his life. He's telling everybody, I'm going to change my life. No, you can't change your life, Ted Williams. You will stay homeless on the street. Now, but what you can do, Ted Williams, you can change your habits. And if you change your habits will change your life. That's what Dr. Phil's trying to get him to do. Change your habit, brother.
Yes.
I need you in rehab for 90 days.
Absolutely. So when you know truth, does that truth set you free?
Yeah. Yep. You're no longer in bondage. You're no longer in slavery. What is slavery? Slavery is in change those same habits, your same thinking, the same thoughts that you've been thinking. Oh, woe is me. You embrace poverty. You talk about poverty all the time. You talk about what a down economy it is. You go to your friends who can't find a job. You hang around your impoverished neighbors. And all you do is just wail about poverty. You just uplift poverty. Poverty has no power over you. I mean, what did, you know, Pilate say to him? He said, don't you know I have the poverty to set you free? And what was Jesus' response? You would have no power over me if it didn't come from above. Tell me you got power over me.
I tell you, I just love having you on the show, and we only have about 8 minutes, but I just want to ask you a couple of personal questions. So how do you stay balanced with all of your success and wealth and money? You're always so humble and gracious, and I've seen you speak personally, and you're always so motivated. How do you maintain that spirit?
Well, I incorporate it's all one. It's not a, to me, it's not balancing. It's more blending.
Blending.
Whatever
okay.
I do, I'm going to have to take parts of my different, you know, all through my life and incorporate it in whatever I do. You know, it's like, you know, if I'm traveling, I try to take my wife and children with me. I try to, you know, spend time doing things that they do and that we do and blending everything together. It's the same people who I associate with. It's more blending than balancing. I always thought my life is one big constant prayer.
Oh, that is so powerful.
One big constant prayer. In the morning, in the afternoon, in the evening, by myself. Here I am in my office at Clark Atlanta University School of Business. Oh, Dr. Kimbrough, you're in the School of Business, blah, blah, blah. But when I got my door closed, they don't see me on my knees praying. Praying for the blessings that you've given me. Thank you. Make sure that I am a steward of everything that you've given me. Let me throw the closing punch to you, Constant Steward. Constant Arnold. I mean, we've got to be good stewards. You know, there's two types of poverty, and I shared this with you the last time that we were, you know, on the air together. There's a poverty of lack and a poverty of poor stewardship. And there are only 8 countries on this planet. You have 168 countries that belong to the United Nations, and only 8 of them are more wealthier than Black America. So Black America, you can moan and bitch and complain about your poverty and everything, blah, blah, blah. But you are the 9th wealthiest country on the face of the earth. Your problem is you're a poor steward of your wealth. You're a poor steward of your wealth. You need to go back and you need to, you know, go to the New Testament and read the parable about the talents. That individual who did not use his talents wisely, who did not use his gift wisely. Look what happened to the talents. Took it from him and gave it to somebody else. Well, if you're not going to use it, I'll give it to somebody else who's going to use it. Because what's the first thing you do when you reach success? You praise God. You uplift his name. He wants his name uplifted.
Right.
I tell people all the time, the only reason why I'm here right now is because of one individual only. As I point my finger to the sky, I'm uplifting him. Oh, lift me up in praise. Wouldn't be here if it is not for you. Well, how in the world are you going to uplift his glory? By stepping out on faith, by using your talent.
So powerful, so awesome. So how can people contact you? Share with
my
listeners all over the world.
Yeah, Yeah, DennisKimbrough.com. You can go to my website, which is in the process of being upgraded. But DennisKimbrough.com, I'm an open book. All my books are still out there. You can go to Borders. You can go to Barnes & Noble, Amazon. All of them doing quite well. I am blessed, Constance Arnold.
So what are you doing with your wife on your anniversary?
Well, I'm going to take a nice bottle of the bubbly in and some flowers, and we'll take it from there. You know.
Okay.
Yeah, we're talking about been there and done that after 41 years. So.
Right. That's, and you have three daughters, am I correct?
It's three daughters. They're all doing well, and two granddaughters. You should have seen me last Saturday for 3.5 hours, me and my two granddaughters at Chuck E. Cheese.
I wish I had a picture
crazy
of that.
I got two granddaughters, 9 and 2 years old, at Chuck E. Cheese.
Oh, that is so wonderful. You're
I said,
always,
are we ever going to run out of tokens?
That is so funny. Well, Dr. Kimbrough, as you are so kind and gracious, and you have blessed the world today. And I just want to thank you so much for interviewing with me. I called you this week, and you said yes. And I just really appreciate
you. Through the phone, and I am hugging you through this phone, Constance.
Thank you. Thank you. Well, once again, this is Constance Arnold with the Think, Believe, and Manifest Talk Show coming to you live, and I will see you this time next week. God bless you.
Thanks for joining us today on Think, Believe, and Manifest. We'll be back next week with another great show. For more information, go to FulfillingYourPurpose.com.
Hello, this is Constance Arnold, author and certified dream coach. Join me beginning January 26th for 4 weeks as I share with you how to make your dreams come true in 2011. You know, during my career, I have helped over 10,000 clients begin to live the life of their dreams. I will teach you how to develop strategies and projects that will move you towards your dream, utilizing a simple, easy, effective process for rapid change. You will learn how to identify and eliminate those limiting beliefs that have been holding you back from the life that you deserve. This is your opportunity to jump into the driver's seat and take control of your life. So register today at the University of Attraction and begin the first steps toward making your dreams come true.